Now
on News Talk 105.9 WMAL.
The Saturday Morning Update.
Good morning. It is the Saturday Morning Update. I'm Rick Fowler, Jeff Wolf behind the console this morning. Jane Houghton, our producer, and lots to cover as always. And I guess we should start with the economy. That is something that impacts each and every one of us. And you may have heard the jobs numbers came out yesterday. They had some decent jobs numbers, and the White House was doing victory laps. But the jobs numbers really don't impact us where we are in our own economies these days. If you've been to the gas station recently or been to the grocery store, you know exactly what I'm talking about. I found out at lunch yesterday I'm not the only one who drives to Virginia to fill up the tank because of the exorbitant gasoline prices in D.C. A colleague I had lunch with yesterday does the same thing, and I imagine a lot of you do as well if you live in the District of Columbia. Well, how bad is it? Let's ask Jake Tapper at CNN how bad it is.
Two things sure stand out in this new poll. One, the economy, a top priority. And two, Americans disapprove of President Biden's handling of this more than ever before.
Yes, they do. And if you look at the numbers, of course, 8.5% inflation, the administration running around saying, yeah, but wages were up 5.5%. But when inflation's up 8.5%, you're losing 3%. Even we can do that math now, can't we? Well, Jake Tapper isn't the only one at CNN talking about how bad the economy is. Harry Enten, CNN analyst.
On the Chiron, you see dismal. I was going to use the word awful. Essentially, if you ask Americans how they view the economy, is it poor or good? It is 77% say bad, bad, bad. Just 23% say good. You got to go all the way back to 2012 to see numbers that bad. And it's not much of a surprise if you ask folks, what's the most important problem facing the country right now? What is the top issue? The economy.
Well, it is the economy for most of us. The Democrats, obviously, attempting to change the narrative. And with the leak of the draft of the Supreme Court ruling on Roe versus Wade, the Democrats have found, I guess, what they expect to be the solution to their problems for the fall. Very little concern among Democrats about the leak itself. More about the efforts to instill fear, to exaggerate. Remember how the Democrats claimed that Republicans were always trying to fearmonger and create fear about crime and other problems around the country, and the Republicans were always stoking fear? Well, the Democrats are taking the draft a little bit further than just abortion rights. Now, here's an example of Elizabeth Warren, the Massachusetts senator. She was on The View.
So when you read Justice Alito's opinion, what he focuses on is history. And he says, we don't have to protect access to abortion because historically we haven't had that access. Boy, that ought to make your gay friends nervous, because we don't have a long history of protecting equal marriage. Yeah. We don't have a long history of protecting interracial marriage.
But if you read the draft, well, she didn't read all 98 pages of the draft, because later in the draft, it says that it is limited to the issue of abortion, that it's not going outside of the area of abortion. But why should we let the facts, as they appear in the draft, have any impact on this whatsoever? Now, Joy Reid is over at MSNBC. She's taking it up a notch. Listen to this.
If you go back to the original conception of this country, an unmarried woman was most likely to be burned as a witch. Most people who were burned as witches were often unmarried or widows, people who were untethered to a man, which is the only thing that grounded even white women in humanity. So if you are an originalist, you essentially want to go back to that original conception of women.
Okay, so I guess Joy Reid's telling us that we're going to go back and start burning women after the Roe versus Wade decision. Okay, what a great Mother's Day weekend kickoff, huh? Now, Elizabeth Warren was kind of toned down on The View. She was exaggerating and stating falsehoods, but she took it up a notch. Now, you may have seen the barriers that they've put up around the Supreme Court, and we'll get to why they're doing that and who CNN is blaming for that. We'll get to that in a minute. But this is Elizabeth Warren addressing a crowd at the Supreme Court. And you may have heard that everybody's talking now about right-wing violence that's expected over the impending decision. I'm not quite sure why there would be right-wing violence, but that's what the narrative is now on the left. Here's Elizabeth Warren with a nice, peaceful, calm statement that she made addressing protesters at the Supreme Court.
United States Supreme Court thinks that they can impose their extremist views on all of the women of this country, and they are wrong.
Yes.
I am angry because we have reached the culmination of what Republicans have been fighting for, angling for decades now, and we are going to fight back.
Okay, maybe they put the barriers up for people like Senator Elizabeth Warren. But no, that's not the way CNN sees it. Here's how CNN is reporting it.
Law enforcement officials are preparing for potential violence in the Capitol and nationwide. Capitol Police are warning the far right is calling for violence against a religious group planning to rally for abortion rights.
There's a potential for violence against abortion clinic providers, abortion clinic staff.
Why? The decision supposedly going in the direction of the pro-life groups. So why would they be attacking the Supreme Court? Doesn't make a lot of sense. That's kind of the tone at the end of the week. Here's how Chuck Schumer kicked it off earlier in the week.
I cannot tell you the outrage I feel at this decision and the outrage I feel that Republicans who did it won't own up to it and duck it. It's despicable.
So that's Senator Schumer. Well, Vice President Harris finally came to life. Here's how she addressed things earlier in the week when it came to the abortion issue.
Those Republican leaders who are trying to weaponize the use of the law against women, will we say, how dare they? How dare they tell a woman what she can do and cannot do with her own body?
Does that sound like Greta Thunberg, remember? How dare they when it came to the environment? You know, if we had seen 2% of that emotion, of that intensity from Vice President Harris, of that effort, if we'd seen 2% of that energy put towards the border, maybe we would have had a little better luck with that root cause issue that they've been working on now for, what, a year and a half? Well, Alejandro Mayorkas picked up some Pinocchios from the Washington Post. We'll get to that in a couple of minutes. But first, let us head over to the WMAL Traffic Center this morning, and Al BD is with us.
I have your traffic update for you. Starting in D.C. first, no reports of any slowdowns on 395, 295, or even 695, including the tunnels and bridges. On the Virginia side of the Beltway, go ahead and set your cruise control. Inner loop and outer loop are at the posted speed limit there. Now in Fairfax County on 66, lanes are at speed eastbound and westbound. And on 95 in Virginia, between the Beltway and Fredericksburg, you're not tapping the brakes. Lanes are open northbound and southbound. And now from GarageDoorRepair.com, the WMAL Stormwatch 7 forecast.
Periods of rain and showers will continue to be likely on this Saturday. We do have a flood watch continuing to be in effect until noon today. A number of flood warning hours, but they're set to expire prior to noon. Either way, watch out for high water spots on the roads and really take caution and allow extra time anywhere you're going today. Temperatures, they're only going to be in the low, possibly mid-50s. Very cool, breezy at times. Of course, you have the rain as well. Showers and a drizzle possible overnight. Lows back in the 40s. Tomorrow, high temperatures only in the 40s to lower 50s across the region. A very raw day for Mother's Day. Morning showers, but we're expecting some dry hours by the afternoon. I'm 7 News meteorologist Alex Ligget at the Stormwatch 7 Weather Center.
A chilly 51 degrees in the nation's capital. We're at 619, the Saturday morning update on WMAL.
News Talk 105.9 WMAL.
Making sense of the news.
And the Saturday morning update continues. I'm Rick Fowler. Thank you for being with us. Secretary Mayorkas, the Homeland Security Secretary, was on Capitol Hill again this week and continuing to peddle, basically peddle the lies. I'm sorry, but he's just so dishonest and so condescending and just takes all of us for complete suckers. And he's not getting away with it. Here's just an example of Mayorkas.
We're not talking about releasing individuals into the United States.
Do you know what released means? Because release doesn't mean just let go into the United States. If we do not detain individuals, they're placed on alternatives to detention.
We've been talking about this for weeks, about just the complete lack of integrity from the secretary as he addresses the issue. Well, the secretary was on Fox News Sunday last week, and as a result of his appearance on Fox News Sunday, Washington Post fact checker Glenn Kessler granted him 3 Pinocchios, the recent claim that illegal migrants who come to the U.S. at the southern border are promptly removed. Well, Washington Post even caught him in a lie. So what more could I say except that we need a new Secretary of Homeland Security? How about that White House Correspondents' Dinner, the super spreader? Now, I don't want to make light of people getting ill at a dinner like that. I will point out that Dr. Fauci privately criticized the decision to hold the White House Correspondents' Dinner. He singled it out as a troubling sign that many Americans no longer view COVID as a serious threat. That's according to Politico. Now, he was reportedly making a drive-by to stop by one of the parties, but he didn't stick around for the dinner, but that's a report. I'm not sure if that's been substantiated. Remember when the White House press corps attacked President Trump for the outdoor lawn ceremony that they had, and they kept claiming it was going to be a super spreader event, super spreader event, super spreader event? You didn't hear too much of that from the White House correspondents this week when they had a dinner that turned out to be a super spreader event. It's 6:23. It's the Saturday morning update on WMAL. Jennifer Harper is coming our way very shortly, and she's got some latest poll numbers for us, and they're not looking too good for President Biden. Some interesting developments on the Donald Trump campaign front. You know, he's been campaigning for candidates around the country. Number of primaries took place this past Tuesday. Well, what was the scorecard for the former president? We'll talk about that with Jennifer Harper. Also talk about the primaries with John Gizzi, our White House correspondent, chief political columnist. We'll also talk to him about that leak at the Supreme Court. Jim Trustee joins us, and of course, he's been in the legal field for some 30 years, both as a prosecutor at the Department of Justice and in private practice as a defense attorney. And he has some very strong feelings about that leak at the Supreme Court, and also what we'll see next in terms of the investigation and the breach. Not that anybody at the White House or in the Democratic Party seems to care about that. We haven't heard really any intensity whatsoever from the Democrats on how serious that development is, that somebody would leak a document. So we'll talk to Jim about that this morning. KT McFarland will be coming up, and we'll get into the whole Biden administration, the approach to foreign policy, what we expect next from the administration. And Lieutenant Colonel Tony Schaefer will join us, and we'll be talking with Tony this morning about the very latest on Ukraine and also about the hacking. So stay with us on the Saturday morning update.
News Talk 105.9 WMAL.
Making sense of the news.
In the news at 6:30, President Biden authorized the shipment of another $150 million in military assistance for Ukraine for artillery rounds and radar systems. Biden says the latest spending means the administration has nearly exhausted what Congress authorized for Ukraine in March. He called on lawmakers to swiftly approve a more than $33 billion spending package that will last through the end of September. Dozens more civilians have been rescued from the tunnels under the besieged steel plant where Ukrainian fighters in Mariupol are making their last stand. The holdouts trying to prevent Moscow's complete takeover of the strategically important port city. Russian and Ukrainian officials said Friday that 50 people were evacuated from the steel plant and handed over to representatives of the United Nations and the Red Cross. And Willie Nelson, 89 years old, is canceling an upcoming performance at the New Orleans Jazz and Heritage Festival. He's postponing other shows due to a positive case of the coronavirus in his band. It's 6:31. This is the Saturday Morning Update. Al BD is in the WMAL Traffic Center this morning.
Good morning. I have your latest traffic update for you. On the Maryland side of the Beltway, I just checked out the traffic cameras. I didn't see any crashes. You'll be at the posted speed limit both on the inner loop and on the outer loop. In Prince George's County, between the two beltways, on the BW Parkway at 95, if you have cruise control, set it lanes are clear north and south. Also in Prince George's County, on Route 50, between the Beltway and the Bay Bridge, no delays east and west. And in Montgomery County on 270, you're not going to tap the brakes between the Beltway and Frederick, northbound or southbound. And now from GarageDoorRepair.com, the WMAL Stormwatch 7 forecast.
Periods of rain and showers will continue to be likely on this Saturday. We do have a flood watch continuing to be in effect until noon today. A number of flood warnings through the morning hours, but they're set to expire prior to noon. Either way, watch out for high water spots on the roads and really take caution. Allow extra time anywhere you're going today. Temperatures, they're only going to be in the low, possibly mid-50s. Very cool, breezy at times. Of course, you have the rain as well. Showers and a drizzle possible overnight. Lows back in the 40s. Tomorrow, high temperatures only in the 40s to lower 50s across the region. A very raw day for Mother's Day. Morning showers, but we are expecting some dry hours by the afternoon. I'm 7 News meteorologist Alex Liggett in the Stormwatch 7 Weather Center.
51 degrees in the nation's capital, 6:32 on the Saturday Morning Update. It is the Saturday Morning Update. Thank you for being with us this Mother's Day weekend, and we wish Jennifer Harper of the Washington Times a very happy Mother's Day.
Well, thank you very much. I appreciate that.
President Trump is not on the ballot yet, but he has had some candidates he's endorsed on the ballot. And how they doing?
Oh, boy. Well, that's a good thing to talk about, because that old Trump bump that they used to talk about is still very much a factor. I don't know if our listeners were monitoring some of the elections that were going on in Ohio and Indiana on Tuesday, but all 22 candidates that Mr. Trump endorsed won their primary elections. That's a pretty good record there, and it even resonated a little bit at the White House. My goodness, President Biden was struck by the influence that Donald Trump had over the Republican Party this time. This is according to outgoing White House Press Secretary Jen Psaki. She said he's been struck by the hold his predecessor seems to have on far too many members, not all, but far too many members of his party. And that was according to Ms. Psaki this week. And probably the most biggest high-profile person was J.D. Vance, and he's the author, the hillbilly elegy author. And he triumphed in his quest to win the Republican Senate primary in Ohio, very high-profile victory. And he kind of ensured the evidence that Mr. Trump has some prowess as a political kingmaker. And you know what? The media took notice of this. I always get amused when this happens. And according to CNN, the primary was the first Senate contest of the year to test the power of Trump's endorsement. And Vance's victory deals a body blow to a small but noticeable resurgence of anti-Trump or post-Trump sentiment in the GOP. That came from Axios. The race features an early test of Trump's influence. That was coming from Vox. I had a whole bunch of them, but just one more. Donald Trump won Ohio for J.D. Vance. Can he score victories in Pennsylvania, North Carolina, and Georgia? That came from USA Today. But it's all the evidence that the old Trump bump is still working.
So that's administration spin for what in real English would be that President Biden is mortified at the popularity Trump still has when the president's polls continue to take a nosedive. A lot of speculation as to whether the former president will give it another go in 2024. What's the latest on whether Donald Trump will run or not?
Yeah, there's that big question, Rick. Will he or won't he run in 2024? And this is a persistent question that's already out there for Mr. Trump. He's kind of keeping his cards high there, not revealing much. But author and veteran broadcaster Bill O'Reilly, who I believe he went on a tour with Mr. Trump, he believes that Mr. Trump is very much in the campaign mood. And this is what he told Newsmax host Greg Kelly. He said, at this point, Donald Trump wants to run in 2024. He wants to run and can't announce it until January 2023 because of campaign finance rules. He has raised an enormous amount of money. I don't think anyone has raised the amount of money Donald Trump has raised. Again, that's coming from Bill O'Reilly. And he also cautioned Mr. Trump not to be so heavily involved in endorsing all these GOP candidates. He may have a point there. Mr. Trump certainly had a lot of luck this time around, but according to Mr. O'Reilly, he says, if I were him, I would kind of stay away from these state races unless you really know the candidate well, because every one of your endorsements that lose, the left-wing press is going to ram that loss down your throat. And that's according to Bill O'Reilly.
It seems that everything today is politicized, and politicized to the extent that family members in some cases don't even speak to each other anymore. How are the American people feeling about this sort of level of intensity in politics?
Well, you have to ask everybody, are you tired of it yet? Are you worried about it? Because if you feel that way creeping up on you, you are definitely not alone, because a lot of voters have really mixed feelings about the constant presence of politics in their life. You know, it's kind of a chore to follow the highs and the lows and the weird things that go on. But, of course, there's a poll for this early in the morning. Fox News has conducted a poll on this very complex sentiment. Here's where everybody stands, so you can sort of compare how you feel. 48% of registered U.S. voters say they are tired of politics and want political issues to go away. Another 39% of voters say they are energized by politics and they want to be more involved. 9% say politics makes them both energized and tired, and 4% don't know how they feel about the matter. And let's go down to another sort of unusual poll here, which asked people whether they were concerned about the fate of the country. Well, if you're worried about that, you're not alone, because, again, this is coming from Fox News. 54% of registered U.S. voters say they are extremely concerned about the future of the country, and that includes 61% of Republicans, and even 47% of Democrats agree with that. So if you're extremely concerned about the future, you're not alone. 33% say they are very concerned. Again, 32% of Republicans, 36% of Democrats agree. 8% say, not concerned. 4% they say, not at all concerned. And 1% don't know. And details on that poll, Fox News poll of 1,003 registered U.S. voters conducted April 28th through May 1. So that's a sentiment right now out there, Rick.
You introduced a term in the column this week that I wasn't familiar with, revenge travel. Please explain.
Well, revenge travel is a great little name. I enjoy this handy new term because it's talking about the fact that there's this very sizable and measurable increase in travel and tourism as the coronavirus sort of wanes, or at least we're hoping it wanes. And this is coming from a professor of mathematics at Rowan College in South Jersey, a gentleman named Eric Jones. And he chose the questions and analyzed the results of an interesting little survey about what he's calling revenge travel. That's people that say, well, you know what? I'm going to travel anyway. So he found that 81% of U.S. adults are going to travel this summer, and 42% overall plan to travel more this summer than they did last summer, when that were only 25% said they were going to travel. So Mr. Jones says the data suggests that summer 2022 will be when more Americans get revenge, meaning they're going to go out there and travel. And meanwhile, if you're a road trip kind of person, 80% of U.S. adults plan to take some kind of a road trip this summer. That sounds appealing to me. And that's about 206 million Americans, Rick. And we're all wound up on our surveys this morning, but this survey of 1,096 U.S. adults was conducted March 1. on behalf of thevacationer.com. That's a consumer site. Talks all about why you're going on vacation and all that stuff. Pretty good. That's thevacationer.com.
Jennifer Harper, Inside the Beltway at the Washington Times. You have a wonderful Mother's Day weekend. It is 6:42. It is the Saturday morning update on WMAL. Al BD's in the WMAL Traffic Center.
I have the latest traffic update for you. Starting in Virginia First, looking at the cameras around the Beltway, lanes are clear both on the inner loop and on the outer loop. On 66 in Fairfax County, no crashes being reported on the eastbound side or on the westbound side. On 95 in Virginia, you're not tapping the brakes between the Beltway and Fredericksburg. Northbound and southbound lanes are open. And in D.C., on 295, 395, plus 695, no reports of any issues there. And now from GarageDoorRepair.com, the WMAL Stormwatch 7 forecast.
Periods of rain and showers will continue to be likely on this Saturday. We do have a flood watch continuing to be in effect until noon today. A number of flood warnings through the morning hours, but they are set to expire prior to noon. Either way, watch out for high water spots on the roads and really take caution. Allow extra time anywhere you're going today. Temperatures, they're only going to be in the low, possibly mid-50s. Very cool, breezy at times. Of course, you have the rain as well. Showers and a drizzle possible overnight. Lows back in the 40s. Tomorrow, high temperatures only in the 40s to lower 50s across the region. A very raw day for Mother's Day. Morning showers, but we are expecting some dry hours by the afternoon. I'm 7 News meteorologist Alex Liggett in the Stormwatch 7 Weather Center.
50 degrees in the nation's capital, 6:44 on WMAL.
You can help those affected by the senseless violence in Ukraine by donating today. Details online now at WMAL.com.
It is a Saturday morning update on WMAL, a happy Mother's Day weekend. I'm Rick Fowler. Jim Trusty is with us each week. He is a partner at IFRA Law, and he is the former chief of the Organized Crime and Gang Section at the U.S. Department of Justice, and you see him often on the Fox News Channel. Jim, good morning.
Good morning, Rick.
All right, let's change it up. Two big stories in the news this week that we want to get into, that of the attack on Dave Chappelle, the comedian, that attack at the Hollywood Bowl in front of a crowded audience, and, of course, the leak at the Supreme Court. But to change it up, why don't we start with some stories that we're not hearing about right now? And what does it mean? As an example, Ghislaine Maxwell, the accomplice of Jeffrey Epstein, not hearing much about that right now?
That's exactly right. You know, sometimes the story is the non-story. And to me, the silence is a little bit disturbing on all three of these cases that we're going to talk about. Ms. Maxwell's had a couple of developments in her case. The first is after about 2 years in solitary confinement, she is now out and in general population. And I will tell you from firsthand experience dealing with cooperating witnesses in particular, a lot of folks would think that they would want to stay in solitary confinement until they're really there. And even folks that are facing a lot of potential danger by being in the general population welcome that because of the monotony of the kind of mental torture of being in solitary. So this is probably good for Ms. Maxwell's mental health, but it's also a little dangerous for her physical health. And so we'll have to keep a little bit of an eye on things there. It's unclear whether there was any involvement from the prosecutors in making that move out of solitary. So it could be a signal of either cooperation or non-cooperation, frankly, by Ms. Maxwell. The other thing that happened very recently was the motions filed by Ms. Maxwell's attorneys to either dismiss the charges pending sentencing or at least consolidate some of them to limit her exposure was largely denied, although the judge did agree that when they have three conspiracy counts, for conduct that really formed a single conspiracy, she should only be sentenced once under double jeopardy principles, something called multiplicity. So she's still facing a potential 55 years maximum at sentencing on June 28th. But the reason I include this one in this category of disturbing silence is we're moving further downstream towards that sentencing, and there's absolutely no sign of prosecution of the Johns, of the men that were engaged, not just with having sex with underage girls, but facilitating the sexual trafficking. There's probably more than just Mr. Epstein that would be in that boat, and we're not seeing any sign of a separate case being brought against these other people. So that's, I think, a pretty bad sign that the Maxwell-Epstein saga may well be completely over on June 28th.
You know, Jim, every once in a while, another email comes out that was found on the Hunter Biden laptop. But what is going on with the U.S. attorney in Delaware? We're not hearing much there.
No, we're not. And the clock is starting to tick in a way that's a little disturbing to me. But look, I'm glad there's silence. You know, you and I have talked a lot about prosecutorial ethics and how prosecutors should not be announcing their investigations or their targets or their preliminary conclusions. But in Delaware, it's eerily quiet. And so I'm still in a position where I'm thinking they're either slow walking the case or they might announce some sort of very soft ending that doesn't really address the Biden family foreign entanglement. And that fundamental question remains on the table, which is, are they going to go where the evidence leads them? And if so, will the attorney general permit them to do that? And so, you know, I kind of pay attention on Friday nights to say, are we going to hear anything from Delaware this Friday night that confirms my worst fears about differential treatment for Hunter Biden? Again, if the evidence isn't there, fantastic. But there's an awful lot of stuff that's been out there from the laptop, from hell, from Bobulinski, from money wire transfers. There's so much smoke that I hope that prosecutors are allowed to determine whether there's fire and that they treat Hunter Biden like somebody whose last name might be different than Biden. You know, treat him the same as any other individual in a high-profile, white-collar corruption investigation.
We haven't heard much about the Alec Baldwin investigation. Does that imply that he's in the clear in terms of criminal liability and any charges that might be filed against him by the prosecutors?
It's kind of the same caveat I just mentioned, which is, you know, I never want to punish publicly a prosecutor's office for being quiet while they investigate things. But I'm growing in my concern about Alec Baldwin's case and whether or not he's going to be prosecuted. Now, it is always a mistake to take a civil complaint like the wrongful death case that was filed here in his matter and treat it as absolute gospel. You know, it can be a partisan document. It can get facts wrong. It's before there's been any discovery. So there's a lot of reasons to not just automatically accept a civil lawsuit as establishing even liability, much less criminal liability. But again, there was devastating information in that complaint about Baldwin being completely on notice that this was a very dangerous set, that using live ammunition was a lethal mistake. And even on the morning of the accident, and I'm putting quotes around the word accident because that's a generous way to portray it, that on that morning, a film crew quit telling Alec Baldwin, this is way too dangerous, you're going to get somebody killed. So if those types of facts are true, it's getting to be about time to wonder why a New Mexico prosecutor hasn't charged him with manslaughter, because it certainly establishes a high degree of recklessness that could support a manslaughter charge. The alternative theory here is that New Mexico is not just starstruck with Alec Baldwin, but they're starstruck with the idea of facilitating movies and that they have kind of a vested interest in keeping the Hollywood types happy. I hope that's wrong, but I include Baldwin in our list of three where the deafening silence is starting to make me worry about the fair pursuit of justice.
Well, one case that got a lot of attention this week was the attack on Dave Chappelle at the Hollywood Bowl. He's performing in front of the huge crowds at the Hollywood Bowl, a huge venue. And he is attacked on stage. But I will leave it to you, Jim, from a legal perspective to explain what happened and explain what the Los Angeles District Attorney and City Attorney are coming up with.
Sure. So in a highly visible assault, Dave Chappelle was near the end of his show, and a gentleman stormed up on the stage and tackled him. It was a pretty good form football tackle, although he very quickly slipped down Chappelle's waist, and Chappelle was able to kind of elude his grasp. In the meantime, as that illusion was taking place, a number of people that either worked security or that were friends with Chappelle jumped up on the stage and tried to go after the attacker. And apparently the stage, maybe they have some L.A. Kings hockey there sometimes, because it was people were slipping all over the place. It was kind of a disastrous video to watch the security response. Well, when they did catch up with this tackler, he took a bit of a beating, it looks like. There's some allegations he might have gotten his arm broken. He had a swollen face when he appeared in court the next day. And the big factual issue here turns on this very scary-looking knife that he was carrying on his person. It was concealed in a fake gun, so it was almost like a spring knife that would come out of something that otherwise looks like a pistol. He did not pull that, at least from my viewing of the video, he didn't pull that out and use that at the time he tackled Chappelle, but there's a real factual dispute as to whether he would have pulled that out while he was fighting with people like Jamie Foxx and some other celebrities, as well as the security people that were trying to take him into custody. So the L.A. District Attorney's Office, and this is Mr. Garcon's office, and he's under a potential recall as we speak, a very progressive office, they announced that there's no felonies involved, and there's been a pretty bad reaction to that, including by Dave Chappelle himself. And now the L.A. City Attorney jumps in because it's a misdemeanor case, and they charge battery, or assault and battery, possessing a deadly weapon with intent to assault, and unauthorized access to the stage. The defendant's on a $30,000 bail, which is keeping him locked up. And the case will proceed fairly quickly, or at least probably fairly quickly. The big factual issue, Rick, that's kind of interesting to me about these charging decisions is how quickly the LADA's office decided there was no felony. And the felony misdemeanor line really circles entirely around that idea of the knife. If he pulled the knife out during his resistance, and they've charged him with possessing a weapon with intent to assault, very close factually, whether that means he's actually pulling it out. If he pulled it out to fight off the security team that was going after him, then this should be a felony case. If there's no evidence of that or insufficient evidence of that, then I suppose it's a legitimate misdemeanor charging decision. But it was a very quick decision by an office that's notorious for downplaying criminal conduct. So we'll have to watch to see where this thing goes. Two things I would just leave you with about the Chappelle case, Rick. The first is, and I've seen roughly similar stories over the years and cases that I've had, this really looks like one of these cases that's at the unfortunate intersection of mental health and criminal, meaning this defendant has got some issues. And I think you might see some delays on this case because he's getting evaluated for either competency to stand trial or for even sanity, for the not criminal responsibility plea. And I don't prejudge how it'll play out. If he's wacky enough, he might end up having a long time of prison-like hospitalization before he's deemed competent to stand trial. So this thing may, for a small case, when it comes to the charges, it might take some time to get done. The other thing that I would just point out that I thought was awfully funny from this matter, which could have been incredibly serious and scary, is that one of the people that stormed the stage was Chris Rock, and you'll remember from his recent experience with the Oscars. And Chris Rock grabbed the microphone from Dave Chappelle literally seconds after the assault and said, "Was that Will Smith?" Which, and that reminded me that I really like Chris Rock, because that was pretty darn funny that he did that, and give him some credit for snatching some humor out of what could have been a horrific situation. But again, yeah, this could have been unbelievably bad. If you see a picture of the knife, if that knife had been used or displayed or actually, you know, plunged into Dave Chappelle, we could be talking with a lot less humor about this situation. So we'll keep an eye on this case. Could be kind of interesting. Chappelle supposedly is very thankful for all of his friends jumping in, and was also disappointed that there wasn't a felony, but I'm not sure yet whether the felony misdemeanor decision was a bad one or a good one.
Jim, we've got an opportunity to spend some more time with you coming up in the 7 o'clock hour, and want to talk to you, obviously, about the leak of the Supreme Court draft, and we will get into that just after 7:15 or so. So stay with us on the Saturday Morning Update.
WMAL-FM, Woodbridge, Washington, a Cumulus Media station.
Making sense of the news.
News Talk 105.9.